ESPN College Football Podcast. Hosted by Kirk Herbstreit and Matt Barry.
It is hard to believe we have embarked on week 12 in college football on the ESPN College Football Podcast. As always, it is a Monday with Kirk Herbstreit and Matt Barry alongside when we whip around the conferences in college football. And Kirk, we love doing this. We go conference to conference, talk about some of the big games. I think for me, I think you would agree the place to start after Saturday is the Big 12, which was the one league where just a lot of stuff went down.
Well, Baylor bounced back. You know, they were disappointed the week before in a loss against TCU, kind of a shocker after Gary Patterson got let go. And they turn around, and I don't know how you felt about it, but to me it looked like they completely dominated that game in every aspect against Oklahoma. Just really looked like they were backed into a corner off of that loss and were determined to go out and play good football, and they did. What was impressive to me, because OU, you know, I've talked a lot really all year since the Tulane game on, and the reason the committee had them well below some of these teams with one loss, and OU fans were like, we're undefeated. Why aren't we up there? Well, they just had not been a complete team for 60 minutes for the entire season.
Right.
With the exception of maybe Texas Tech, you know, the team that they had played a couple weeks ago. So this was their chance. We kept presenting it like, here we go. Baylor, Iowa State, Bedlam, Big 12 championship. This is where Oklahoma takes off. And bang, Baylor just pops them right in the mouth. And Oklahoma, it's one thing to see OU's defense kind of struggle, but to see their offensive line continue to be an issue, pressure on Caleb Williams, could not get anything going. It's just bizarre to see Lincoln Riley and his offense not find their rhythm. And so the game was really one-sided. Give Baylor all the credit. It's, you know, we're focusing on OU because they're right, high in the rankings, but Dave Aranda, second year, makes you really wish they didn't lose to TCU, because where would they be right now? Right.
There you go. That TCU, look at that TCU loss, because then TCU goes and gets pummeled by Oklahoma State, who you could argue is the most complete team of the Big 12 right now. Mm-hmm. Everybody questions their offense, but you don't hang 63 in conference against just anyone. And Oklahoma State, look, we've said this before in this podcast. We typically talked about Mike Gundy offense. But this defense, the way that they've played all year, you mix that in with a Spencer Sanders, if they get Jaylen Warren and some of these guys going, Herbert, you could argue right now, Big 12 power rankings, Oklahoma State, and flip back and forth. Oklahoma's got the talent. Caleb Williams, uncharacteristically off, but Oklahoma State, to me, is the best team in the league right now.
Well, after last weekend, I mean, Oklahoma had their chance, and they'll get a chance to play Oklahoma State in Bedlam. Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, you definitely can say that. And they've been the most consistent team, especially their defense. You know, they're one of the top defenses, I think, not just in the conference, but they've been so consistent with Jim Knowles that I think they've established themselves as a top-tier defense in the country. The thing I would tell you, Matt, that I really like is – that you got to look at Mike Gundy. It's a guy that 10 years ago was all about spreading you out, throwing it downfield, all about kind of that Mike Leach kind of approach to offense. That was who they were. And offensive coordinators would come and go, and you would still see that element within their offense. And, man, it's just – he evolves and changes just to the strength of their team every year. And right now their strength is we're going to run the ball with Jaylen Warren. We're going to go play action. We're going to go – Spencer Sanders is going to be part of this run game, keep defenses honest. And in worst case, we're going to punt. We just don't want Sanders to turn the ball over. Let's give this team we're playing the long field to work with, and let's get our defense out there. Let's do that for 60 minutes, and let's see where we are. That's who they are this year.
Yep.
Working out for them, you know. So, yeah, they've been a fun team to watch. The negative, of course, continues to be Texas in this conference. I don't know what your feeling is on that, but just when you think it can't get any worse after losing their four straight in Ames, it was 30-7, Bo Davis on the bus after ripping into them, which I thought was great, by the way. And now they follow it up the following week at home with a loss 57-56 in overtime to Kansas. And by the way, Kansas gave Oklahoma all they could handle. Yep, so there's exactly something going on in Lawrence. You know what I mean? So this isn't the old Kansas that can't do anything right. This is something's potentially brewing in a year or two, Kansas. So I just want to say that. But still, Texas cannot play the way they did. What's your take on where we are? Sark's already feeling the heat, you know, in Austin. You know, they want to get rid of Sark. Oh, we made a mistake. You know, what's your take on all that nonsense?
Two things. One, Lance Leipold, head coach Kansas. He is one of those guys that's going to make you believe. He's a collar guy.
Yeah.
Brings his lunchbox. He came from Buffalo where he went there and rebuilt that program. So Leipold is going to get that thing going eventually. But
which would be fun, by the way.
I think it'll be great.
Yeah.
He's going to find guys that – he's a DNA guy. Like, I'm not going to go for stars. I'm going to go for a guy that can handle what I do, and I think that's where they're headed.
That's where everyone should coach, by the way, in 2021. I agree. Everything else.
And transfer portal, but with Texas, they haven't lost five in a row since 1956.
That's all that.
And that is historically bad. I think Sark's the guy. I'm never one to bail on a guy before 3 to 4 years, maybe even 5 years. But when you have a new coach, you're inheriting another guy's players. And I know Bijan, they've got talent. Xavier Worthy's good. Casey Thompson, quarterbacks, have looked good in spots. But talent doesn't necessarily mean, Herb, that you sync with how a coach wants to come in and coach you. There's a big difference. And since that second half of Oklahoma, look, Sark's challenging his guys. Does anyone want to lose five straight? No. Does anyone want to lose to Kansas? No. But you can't bail on this team and this coaching staff because they're handling a little adversity. Let him get his guys in there. Let him go to winter conditioning and spring ball and say, hey, you know what? Remember what it was like losing to Kansas? Never again on my watch. And start building this thing from the ground up. I get Texas thinks that their birthright in college football is winning championships. Well, we haven't seen that since Mac Brown. So you've got to be patient. And Sark's the guy. Just give it time.
But you're right. I'm with you, bud. I'm with you. This whole deal on Texas. I'll say this. Charlie Strong told me when he was the head coach at Texas, he's like, he wasn't fired yet. He said, he just got there. He was coaching. He was getting a lot of heat. And he said, man, this is a tough job. He goes, because on one hand, they want me to recruit a lot of these five stars in this state, but I don't think they're great players, but there's such immense pressure to recruit this player out of this area or this player because they're five stars. And if you don't recruit those, they're going to crush you because you didn't land that recruit. And if you do bring them in, you're kind of like deep down, like, I don't know if this guy's a dog. I don't know if this guy's a warrior. He wants to fight. But we check the box because the recruiting people like us because we got the guys. And then you got a roster full of guys that are 4 and 5 stars, but you really don't think that they're great players.
Right.
Sark knew this before he went. In fact, he and I had a conversation when he was talking about his name was in there. And I had heard, I called him. I said, man, you're going to take this. He goes, yeah, I think I'm going to. And I said, you know the deal there, right? And he goes, oh, yeah. Before I even commit, I'm going to talk to him about, I'm going to have to do this. And it's going to be hard. It's going to be really hard to do this the right way. And as long as you're going to support me through this, we're going to do this and it's not going to be pretty. So my point to that is this. You can't just look at a roster. Yeah, you're Texas. You have better talent than Kansas and all that, obviously. But in order to change the culture there that has been struggling since 2010, even the last couple of years with Mac, this thing, something got into this program. It's like a virus and it's permeated itself for almost over a decade now.
Yeah.
So to get it done right, you can't put a Band-Aid on this problem over here and a Band-Aid over here and then expect it to be, look, oh no, look, we're 8-4. Everything's fine over here. Nope. It's almost like a decayed tooth. You're going to have to, you got to really go to work on that thing. And there's going to be blood flying and spit and all kinds of
water. It's going to hurt.
Yeah, it's going to hurt. And that's what they're going through right now. If I were him, I'd have my head on a swivel. And I'd be looking for how many guys when it's really bad, 1956 bad, who shows up to practice and wants to work and compete. Because I don't care if I have 11 or 12 or 15, Everybody else, I would do everything in my ability to encourage them to go to transfer portal. I would play with 30 guys, and then I would bring in, I would be very calculated, whether it's through transfer portal, bringing them in, or it's high school recruits. I'd be very calculated, and I don't care if you're a five-star. I don't care if you run a 4.4. Who wants to be a part of this program and take pride in this and take pride in being a Texas Longhorn? That's all I'm going to bring in for the next 2, 3, 4, 5 years. Obviously, we're looking for talent, but we're not interested in 7-on-7 playing football in shorts, Texas talent. We're looking for guys that want to roll up their sleeves and pound people. And if that's all I would bring in, that and character is all I would bring in. And it's going to take 2 and 3 recruiting classes to get this thing turned. So I'm not shocked that it looks ugly. How do they respond to it is going to be the million-dollar question. And just block out all the podcasts down there, you know, the media, the fans, just block it all out and put your head down and go to work. Because those same people are going to be telling you how great you are when you get it going. So that's my take on it.
Let's clip that off and send that to the people, the fans of the University of Texas, because it does take patience. So let's move on now. We went Big 12 and some happenings there. Look, next couple of weeks going to be interesting to the Big 12, but the Big 10 now, we are getting to the point this weekend. Obviously, we know Ohio State, Michigan State, game day going to be in Columbus, big game, noon Eastern, ABC. But it's a big game, Kirk, because Ohio State did their part against the Spoilermakers. Michigan State did their part. Michigan keeps doing their part. Wisconsin keeps winning. You start looking how this conference is churning here in the last couple of weeks. Buckle up, because it's going to be fun to watch.
Well, I think the best player, one of the best players in the country that not a lot of people talk about, Jackson Smith and Jigba. Mm-hmm. There's so much attention on Olave and even Garrett Wilson, who had a monster game coming back from that concussion where he was held out the week before. It's great to see that trio gets a lot of attention, but Smith and Jigba, I just don't feel like people pay attention to him in the slot and what he's done. And Hartline intentionally moved him in there to be able to get one-on-one opportunities, and he has flourished. And I think Stroud continues to show he's the real deal. So they, you know, it shows up now this week. We got Michigan State, a nice big win against Maryland. Now they come in and it's go time. We've been waiting for this. You know, everybody's going to play everybody.
Yeah.
Here we go. Michigan State gets their chance to go to Columbus and try to knock off Ryan Day's ball club. And how about Jimmy Harbaugh? You know, we talk a lot about, man, he can't win the big one. And what's wrong with Michigan? And what's wrong with Harbaugh? He can't beat Ohio State or Penn State or Michigan, and here he gets, or Michigan State, and here he gets a huge win. The game was going in a different direction late, and late they made a play. The quarterback, McNamara, I thought played well most of the game, and guy's having a really good year, really solid year at quarterback. And how about Hassan Haskins? You know, without Blake Corum, kind of had to carry the load, but I bet you Harbaugh had about a 100-pound dumbbell kind of hanging around on his neck, and he just took that thing and just threw it on the ground in that post-game celebration. And he should. That was a great win for him personally and a huge win for the Wolverines.
Yeah, and you mentioned McNamara, 19 of 29, 217, three touchdowns. Hassan Haskins, 31 carries, 156 yards. That's just good, effective Michigan football. 21-17 is a good Big Ten score. Now what you need is you need everybody to do their part in Week 12 with Michigan going to Maryland, which, look, Maryland's had their struggles with Mike Locksley, but they can score points when they want to. And I'm not sitting here suggesting that Ohio State's a gimme against Michigan State, because that's going to be a tough game for them. But if you look at the teams and you look at Ohio State, you could argue probably top to bottom the most talented team in the country with regards to offense. If Ohio State does their part and Michigan does its part against Maryland, now you're really setting up for a special final regular season weekend of the season. But so much football to be played. But I just love where we're trending, because each year we try to build things up, and sometimes an upset or two prevents that from happening. But at least right now, boy, does it look fun here going into week 12 and 13.
Yeah, and we just have to continue to applaud Paul Christ and Wisconsin. Oh, my God. You know what I mean, man? One in three after those two losses to Notre Dame and Michigan and not looking like they had much hope at all of salvaging the season of any kind. And they just turned that thing around since, and they've not lost a game. Six in a row. You know, knocked off Purdue, knocked off Iowa within those wins. And now they got Nebraska and Minnesota at the end of the year. And they appear to be headed to Indianapolis in the Big Ten championship. And whoever survives that gauntlet in the Big Ten East, they're going to have a nasty defense sitting there with their arms crossed, looking at that Big Ten East champ. Like, okay, you thought you got through it and you're done. Guess what? You got one more. And you got to go through us in this defense. So they found an identity. God bless them, man. I love to see teams in this era of, you know, win every game or else 1-3.
Yep. And they've won. You talk about DNA. You talk about the right DNA. That's a perfect example of it.
That's culture. That's recruiting the right guys. That's what you do in the offseason. That's having roots in a program. And God bless them, man. That's an easy team to pull for. Six in a row. They got Nebraska, Minnesota, like I said, strong chance of them finishing it out with eight straight wins and going 9-3. And like I said, heading into the Big Ten championship to take on whoever gets out of the other side.
We turn our attention now to the SEC. By the way, quickly, Braylon Allen, 17 years old, running back for Wisconsin. I'm going to need a birth certificate on that kid because he is a grown man at 17 years old. SEC, that's where College Game Day was this past weekend in the Grove, Lane Kiffin, Texas A&M. Texas A&M was that trendy, hey, they've got it figured out. All they need is an Iron Bowl loss, and they're in the SEC championship game. And then out of nowhere, that Landshark defense, which we haven't talked about in years because it hasn't existed, held Texas A&M to 19 points. I love what Lane Kiffin's doing at Ole Miss. And I said this yesterday, and I'll say it again because Lane's name gets popped up, Florida, LSU, USC. Maybe he's got the right job. Maybe that's the job for him because it looks great on him.
I'll tell you what, you know about it down there. Not just the Grove. To me, it's just the setting, the feel. What an incredible place. I'd have a hard time leaving there if I were the coach just because it just feels like a nice place to live. You know, and a nice place to be a part of the campus. I mean, that it's like I was taking video and sending it to my wife. I was just like, I mean, look at this is a college campus. It was at night. They had all the lights on around the square. And I was like, I said it on the air. It's like going to, I don't know, like Disney World or something. The way when you walk around, all the moms and dads are back. Everyone's polite and friendly to each other. It's like a.
If a movie director created a college town set, it would be this.
That's it. Yeah. And we've been to some great campuses this year, but that one really, really stands out. So, and then, you know, great game day experience. You know, they took advantage of the stage that they had, and then they went out and played dominating football. And you really summed it up. You do all this prep for a game. You know how it is. You do your Thursday night games. You think you kind of have a feel. And then you watch the game and you're like, okay, A&M, Isaiah Spiller, offensive line, Ole Miss is going to have their hands full up front. And it's a complete opposite. DJ Durkin had that defense hair on fire against that run game. And the atmosphere really, I think, was challenging for that offensive line. It was the first time they played a real true road game, tough atmosphere all year. And then Jerry and Ely decided to eat his Wheaties before he showed up. He decided to run with physicality. I love their quarterback. You know, Crow is just one of those guys, even really playing at 80%. He's still a fun guy to watch. But, huge win, 8-2. Chance for this team to, you know, believe it or not, they still got to go out and compete and win games. But if they keep their focus, you have Vanderbilt and on the road in the Egg Bowl against Mississippi State, very strong chance that this team could finish at 10-2. And maybe have a shot at a New Year's Six bowl game. I mean, that's a hell of a year for an Ole Miss football fan, don't you think?
Oh, going in, I mean, you sign up for 10-2 with something you know, going your way maybe early in the season from talking about 11-1 and competing for an SEC West championship. And that's my point. If you can do this and you can prove that you can do it, there's no reason you can't be an SEC West contender year in and year out with what's going on at LSU. I know Alabama's the standard in that division, but you know, Saban, I mean, he looks like he could be there forever, but he might not. I mean, that, you just hang out.
Yeah, and I let's just say this, two more things. Georgia got tested. We thought they might get tested against that up-tempo approach with Hendon Hooker, Josh Heupel. You know, they've been executing and scoring on everybody and doing it at will. They jumped out. They had 10 points. Georgia, it was weird to see Georgia down 7-0. You know, it's like, uh-oh. And then Georgia, they just settled. Dan Lanning, the defense coordinator, made some great adjustments. Their own offense started pounding Tennessee and had it, you know, love to see the quarterback Stetson Bennett scrambled around and making plays. And they ended up dominating that game when it was all said and done in the second half. And with Bo Nix and Auburn losing, you know, that was kind of that sneaky potential. Is Alabama going to get tripped up at the end of the year against Bo Nix going to Jordan-Hare in a rivalry game? And I think that now looks like a game. And plus with Auburn losing and A&M losing, we're getting more and more headed to that Alabama,
right,
Georgia game in Atlanta at the SEC championship, it appears.
Yeah, and our thoughts with Bo Nix, reports out today, broken ankle, so out for the year. And so you never want to see that out of one of your star players. But look, I'd sign up for Alabama and Georgia any day of the week. So it would take a kick six type miracle, but I don't see it happening.
Yeah, Arkansas gets to 7-3. Kentucky gets to 7-3.
So yeah, those are
all great stories there. And then we had Florida, brother. Like we're talking about Texas, Florida. I got to the bus. We had all these games going. You know, just like you guys. And I'm respectfully Florida. Samford was. We only have 5 TVs. It just wasn't even a thought. And then I think you may have done the update. And I'm like,
oh, yeah.
I was like, what is happening? I think it was 42-28 in the second quarter.
Most points ever given up by Florida against any team in any school in program history in the first half.
What in the heck was that?
Bad.
I know they came back to win. Emory Jones went crazy, but he should. What in the world? After all these changes, they fired Todd Grantham, fired the line coach. Wow, that was shocking. Yeah.
And the thing is, we talked about Sark. He's in year one, so he's going to get the time. Mullen's in year four. And people are going to start. I still am one of those believers of, then who are you going to get? If you think that if you want to run Mullen out, well, who are you going to get? I still believe in him as a coach, but a la Scott Frost, he's going to have to show it next year.
Yeah, we talked about this on game day, and Tim Tebow, who we all love, and he's a diehard Gator and maybe the best to ever put that uniform on. He just said, you know, hey, we're closer than people think. A little tweak here, a little tweak there. And I think it's a little bit broader than that. You know, I think you got to reevaluate. Much like we were just talking about with Texas, you got to reevaluate who you want to bring in on that roster. Mm-hmm. And I think you got to be careful of bringing in people that have individual intentions of their own career. We all have individual intentions, but those need to be, when you're an 18-22-year-old, those need to be important to you. But when you look at your mirror in the morning and you have goals, if your only goals are 1,000 yards receiving or 1,000 yards rushing, first round draft pick, if that's okay to have those. But if you don't have next to those 12-0 SEC championship, whatever it might be, then you're going to have some problems, you know? So I think there's too many individuals currently on that roster.
Let me ask you this before we move to the Pac-12. If you look at Miami, Florida State, and Florida, all of them not where they want to be, who do you believe is set up in the best position now to get back to what we're accustomed to seeing?
I really loved what we were seeing from Miami.
Yeah,
the previous 6 weeks, and you know, you got caught up in a rivalry game, and give Florida State credit. I've said from day one that I think Mike Norvell's the right guy there. I think if you give him time, he can get that thing going. I really do. So that was a huge win for him,
yeah,
on a personal level. But if you're saying where we're going to be in the next 2 to 3 years, it feels like Norvell has a chance, I would say, just a bit ahead of Florida, of Miami, I would say. What about you?
Yeah, I'm leaning Florida State as well. But with Miami, they've got a lot of young talent. If the administration is patient there with Manny Diaz and Rhett Lashley, they've got a lot of young players. I think they're close. I would agree with you on Florida State with Mike Norvell. I would say Florida's the furthest away, but I just hope those programs, like we always say, that's good for football when they're really good. And I guess we could pivot quickly to the ACC because we're talking about Miami and Florida State. Wake Forest, a week after losing a shootout to North Carolina in a non-conference game, clinching scenarios this week in the ACC. Say what you want about that league and say what you want about Wake Forest being deserving or not. They're a fun football team, and they got a big win against NC State.
Yeah, a shootout. You know, I thought there'd be a little bit more defense. Even Wake's gotten into quite a few of these type of games where they just rely on their offense and their playmakers to just outscore their opponent. They did it again. I thought Dave Doran's bunch might bring a little bit more defense into that. I know they've had a lot of injuries this year, but they've proven to be a pretty physical team despite those injuries. But Sam Hartman and company would not be denied. You know, they end up winning it by 3 in a shootout, 45-42. Notre Dame gets a hold of Virginia in kind of dominating fashion. Notre Dame kind of outside looking in, kind of right. Looking. You know, I know they're an independent in football now, ACC last year, but still just the fact they played Virginia. Let's keep an eye on them on Tuesday night if they climb up a little bit. Clemson seems to have found a little bit of rhythm. You know, they're still not what you expect them to be. And they played UConn. They've got a showdown coming up this week. You know, we'll see if they're able to try to put it all together with their chance against Wake. Ironically, home game and Clemson's favorite, you know, so yes. You think about all that we've seen from Wake, and yet they go on the road against Clemson as an underdog. And I think that the other one that stands out to me is Pitt on the previous night, on Friday night, a huge win against North Carolina. They're still sitting there at 5-1 and 8-2 overall, which is incredible success. And they got Virginia at home in a must-win situation because Virginia is sitting there at 4-2. Just a game back. And if they were to win this game head to head, that would put them in the driver's seat to get to Charlotte. So a big opportunity for Pitt to kind of close the door and try to secure a spot to go on to get to the ACC championship.
Yeah. And Virginia held out Brennan Armstrong against Notre Dame, saving him for the game against Pitt. Had the pleasure of calling that Pitt North Carolina game on Thursday.
I know.
It was fun, man. That's a fun team. Narduzzi's doing a great job there. I mean, it's just a good story. So I'm looking forward from watching both of those teams play, get each other for the ACC Coastal Division coming up.
We got to get the Pac-12 in for you.
Utah and Oregon sets the table. We finally get one of those games again. And I want to use the same example, Kirk, that we used for Wisconsin. For Utah. I mean, at the beginning of the season, they were a lot of people's favorites and they were all over the place to start the year.
Right.
And now they have found their stride, much like the Badgers, with an opportunity to sew up the Pac-12 South.
Yeah, I think Cameron Rising helped settle them down on offense. And I think, you know, you go back to that San Diego State game and they lost that by a couple points. They, much like we were saying with Wisconsin, they're sitting there at 1-2. And the thing could have definitely gone in a very bad direction, but I think Rising gave them balance. They're always going to be physical at the line of scrimmage. And, you know, it was close for a little bit with Arizona, which surprised me. I don't know if they had their eyes peeking ahead the next week in Oregon or not, but now we get there. You know, if you're a Pac-12 fan, this has the potential of being not potentially, it's going to be a precursor for what's going to happen in Las Vegas in the Pac-12 championship in a few weeks. So this one, Oregon's going to earn their keep. If Oregon wants to get to the playoff, forget about rankings.
Yeah.
Forget about, we beat Ohio State. Forget about anything. The ball is in your court. Oregon, you got 3 weeks left. Can you go out and can you go to the Mus and take on the Utes, which is always tough to do when you play them there? Can you win that game? And if you do that, you got to follow it up with a Civil War back at home. And if you do that, then you get to go to Las Vegas and go up against Utah again. And if you happen to run the table and win those three games, you don't have to worry about a discussion. You don't have to worry about, give us some respect. All the respect that you want will be handed to you. So pretty cool spot to be in with 3 weeks. Tough ask, tough to beat a team twice, but it's right there for them. We'll see if they can do it starting Saturday when they go to Utah to try to win that game.
There you go. Because every week, being on that show on Tuesdays and then College Game Day, and then we get out here, all the complaining and yelling and screaming, respect us. Well, guess what? The field's going to dictate it or they're the one team, perhaps, of any of these playoff contenders. Cincinnati has to have some stuff happen in front of them. But Oregon's that one team that's had a little asterisk by it. We'll remove that if you take care of it.
It's over. Yeah, I mean, and if you can say to your team in August, hey, guys, with 3 weeks left to play, we're going to control our own destiny. Control our own destiny. We're in the Pac-12. 3 weeks to go. Control our own destiny to get to the playoff and win a conference championship. It's where you want to be. Now you got to go out and do it. They got challenged a bit against Washington State, really in control most of that game to their credit. I feel like Oregon is going – I was concerned about Oregon when they had that three-week stretch of games where they didn't look good. You know, they played Arizona. They lost to Stanford. They played Cal. All three of those games just didn't feel like – the same Oregon team that we had seen when they traveled across the country to beat Ohio State. Now, they had injuries and Joe Moorhead situation with Stanford game. So everything wasn't quite in sync. But from the UCLA game where they had to fight all the way back, because that wasn't looking good early, they came all the way back. It was almost like they shook that three-week stink off of them. And Colorado, they pounded. They go to Seattle, which is a tough place to play, and win in a rivalry game. They dominate Washington State by the time they pull away in the second half. Now they look like, okay, they're getting healthy. Now we go. Now we see what they can do. Like I said, I'm as fired up for that game Saturday as any game that we have this weekend. This is going to be a big one. Can't wait to watch it.
And I can't wait to see a collision of styles. Before we move on, another Pac-12 job opening. Jimmy Lake fired after, I think it was 13 games in his career at Washington. So
what's your take on that?
Yeah, it just sounds like wrong fit. It sounds like the fit from the beginning, the guy that Chris Peterson anointed is the guy that was going to take over for the program he built, just didn't fit within the administration and how he handled certain situations internally. Said a lot of things publicly and then didn't back them up, had the incident on the sideline with the player a couple of weeks ago. And then during that investigation, they unearthed another alleged incident in 2019 when he was an assistant. So my thoughts on it, I just don't think it was a good fit, but one of the premier jobs in the Pac-12 and on the West Coast opened up.
What jobs do we got? USC, we got Washington, we've got TCU,
LSU.
We got LSU. There's some big jobs out there.
There's some good jobs. You know who I would go get if I were Washington? I know there's some of the names that popped up. Jay Norvell, he's one of the names that popped up. Kalani Sitake's another name.
Oh, that's a great one, yeah.
And I don't know what his career aspirations are, but if I were Washington, I'd fly to Dallas, talk to Kellen Moore, and see if he's interested in being a college football head coach.
Wow.
That's what I'd do.
I like that.
I mean, I would go to Kellen Moore and say, hey, you may have aspirations of being an NFL guy.
No, you've never been a head coach. You're cool with that.
So let's go. Let's go see. He knows the area. He knows that part of the country. He knows offense. They've got Sam Heward, that five-star true freshman.
Yeah.
I'd go get him, but I'm
not. I like that. I like that outside the box thinking. And he's had a heck of a start to his career as a coach.
Right.
He's a young guy that can relate. We got to get Washington and USC going, man.
I know.
We got to get those two behemoths rolling in the right direction for your conference.
Don James, when he had that thing going in Seattle, that's the last place you wanted to deal with was Seattle and Napoleon Kaufman.
Napoleon Kaufman, number 8.
Oh, man.
Ooh, I mean, he was boom.
I couldn't stand that guy. He was like, oh, great.
So sweet. Oh,
Kaufman's there. He had the towel, the way the towel went in.
Napoleon Kaufman. They had Beto Bryant. I think they had so many good players in that era.
It was scary.
The uni. It was back when they wore shoulder pads.
Yeah.
The neck thing. It was like, I remember they came to Columbus to play Ohio State. Joey, by the way, had a huge game against them. Really got Joey going. It was, I think, in 93. And I was doing sideline radio for Ohio State. And this is when Washington, they won the national championship in 92.
Yep.
They take the field and you're just like, look at these dudes. Just athletic. Lawyer Malloy, their safeties look like linebackers. I mean, they were beautiful. Just beautiful. We need to get them back to that. That's what we need to get them. And let's get USC back to when I played and Junior Seau was on the roster and Mark Carrier was on the roster. I mean, they beat you before the game started. SC was going to crush you.
They trot out there and like Curtis Conway's the receiver and you're like, oh, hell, I got to deal with him. And Chris Claiborne.
Reggie Bush and Leinart and Lindale White, those teams, like, let's get it back, boys.
People don't understand the Pac-12 back in the day, then the Pac-10. I wanted to touch on Cincinnati real quick because they've got the big one against SMU that we've been pointing to all year. They had the near miss a couple of weeks ago, came out firing against USF on Friday, got the win there. What do you expect to see out of Luke Fickell Bearcats in this weekend's game against SMU?
I keep saying the challenge for any team that's a group of five that gets into this spot. UCF was there for a number of years, and going way back, we saw other teams. What I've always witnessed is Chris Peterson and Boise State did the best job of kind of, and Kyle Whittingham in Utah before they joined the Pac-12, did the best job of blocking it out and not feeling like, because we all say on these Tuesday night shows and when it comes to, boy, Cincinnati's got to look good. And when you try to look good, it doesn't work.
Right.
You try to make plays 70-yard touchdowns every play, you're in trouble. Or if you try to do a pick six, instead of just playing fundamental football, and I guarantee you Luke is talking to his guys about, listen, guys, we don't need to make a statement. We don't need to win by 50. We don't need to make every play perfect. Let's just play our game. Let the game come to you and then just go execute on offense and defense. They'll be pushed around. You know, SMU is a team that's gotten a little bit off track. You know, the last few weeks, they haven't played as good as they were early in the year. Last week, they got their offense going better against UCF. That was followed up by back-to-back losses on the road against Houston and Memphis. So they've not been the same team on the road as they have been at home, and now they got to go to Nippert. So I think Cincinnati's going to win the game. Mm-hmm. But this is more of if you're trying to state a case for Cincinnati, and Luke would tell you this, he said it. It was hard for me to, like, make an argument on our behalf last year when we weren't really playing our best football. He said that on our air. Mm-hmm. And they're kind of doing the same thing right now. Like, they need to, without trying to, they need to start trending in a direction. When you turn on the game and you watch them, you're like, geez, these guys, they are physical. Cause they are. They're physical and they're athletic and, man, they're a good team. They get this game, and then they get Houston at the end of the year, who right now is maybe playing as good, if not better, than Cincinnati. They're playing really good football. So that'll be a good opportunity in the last week of the year in the conference championship.
And they could use Houston to keep winning. They could use Houston to be ranked come Tuesday night to get another ranked win under their belt. So that'll be a fun one to watch this weekend. Okay, as we do every week, we are going to wrap it up with This Is Why We Love the Sport.
That's why we love this sport.
The reason I love the sport this weekend.
This is why I love this sport.
Herbie, as always, lead us off. Why do you love the sport this week?
I think I'm going to talk a little bit about the coaching carousel and some of the madness that surrounds this sport. And maybe because you and I and others, we get a chance to get to know these guys. We don't pull for these teams or coaches. You know, sometimes people ask us if are you pulling for teams that were, whether it's where you went to school or particular coach you have a relationship with. I personally like to see these guys do well. And when they struggle, I don't enjoy that. You know, and I know we've seen a lot of these guys get let go, but there's just something about Jim Harbaugh, you know, what he's been through, what he's endured at Michigan. You know, the guy played there, played for Bo, been through a lot. And I've just always been impressed. He's not the most media friendly guy, but I've been impressed with how he's not ever gotten short with people or snapped with people. He just kind of takes the high road, even though it frustrates a lot of people. And his team this year had more pressure on them, I feel like, than maybe any team coming into this season, because he was truly on the hot seat. And his team, I think of all the teams he's had, maybe the 16 team, you could say this about, but this team has just gone out every week and just done what they need to do, with the exception of the second half against Michigan State. And now they go to Penn State. If they would have lost that game, do you realize how much time you and I would have been talking about Jim Harbaugh, another tough loss? Geez, what's going on? They got to find a way to win one of these games. But they did. Right. And so what I love about this is, this team and this coach are blocking out the distractions, blocking out the noise, had a huge win. And I think, if I'm a little bit biased, it's, I love when Ohio State and Michigan is for all the marbles. And with that win, they've got Maryland this week, and then they got Ohio State in Ann Arbor. It looks like, you know, we have a potential of a heavyweight showdown. If Ohio State can beat Michigan State, heavyweight showdown the following week in Ann Arbor.
That's not biased, man. That's just for the beauty of the sport, having that game come down to something. And if I'm hearing you correctly with why you love the sport, perhaps patience on Michigan's administration to let Harbaugh get this thing figured out.
You got it.
For that. The reason I love the sport this week, I don't typically like to promote things on social media because I think social media is god-awful, but I will this week, because if you find it, you'll see a video out there of Jared Casey's mother. He is the player that got the two-point conversion for Kansas to get the win, 57-56. And it shows the vantage point of the mom in the stands watching her son catch the two-point conversion and end a 56-game road conference losing streak, and the sheer joy in her voice. Little things like that. Unheralded Jared Casey got to catch the two-point conversion in Austin to break one of the worst streaks in the country. And the mom got to be there for it and see it. It was just a beautiful, it's legitimately why I love the sport, that this dude made the biggest catch of his life and his mother got to see it. And it's being shared all over social media.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. That's great. I saw that and retweeted it. Sent, I think, to his brother who took some video, you know, just to see 47 kind of walk in. It was almost like, did this just happen? Like he was it's like he was in a dream. Like he was looking around like, what just happened? You know, here he is in the middle of it, in Austin, Texas, and he's looking at all this burnt orange. And I think I retweeted, it makes, in the blink of an eye, all that sacrifice, all that work that you hoped would one day pay off, pays off just like that. You know, that was cool. And I love these videos, like the kicker that made the kick, you know, I love to see.
Yeah.
That's very cool.
You know, it takes you back to, I think, week two or three when Jake Haner was on the field at the Rose Bowl after beating UCLA. And he's like, oh my gosh, what is this? Anyways, another great week of college football. Can't believe we're already embarking on close to the final weekend of the regular season, but there's so much left to play for. I got a few of these left before we get to postseason. So always a pleasure. For Kirk Herbstreit, I'm Matt Barry. Herbie, enjoy Columbus this weekend. I cannot wait to see what we're discussing.